Scripture reading is from Ecclesiastes chapter 4, beginning in verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart.
The Bible has quite a bit to say about friends. This passage that Travis just read for us is, in fact, one of the most extensive passages in the Bible about friendship. And it is about that I want us to consider this evening, briefly. Friends are, of course, important to us. And sometimes we confuse a little bit what it means to say that someone is our friend, and confuse even who really is our friend and who is not our friend. My dad used to say that a man might have a large number of acquaintances with whom he was friendly, but if he had one or two real friends in life, he was blessed, and blessed indeed. And sometimes we presume just because people are friendly when they see us, and that we laugh when they tell us jokes and greet us, that's our friend. But Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12 indicate to us some of the characteristics of one who is really a friend. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, in verse 10, we find out that if one of them falls, the other will lift his companion up. And a friend is not just someone who is friendly with you, but a friend is someone that you can count on. A friend is the one or two or three people that you can call at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, I need you. And they don't ask what's the problem or what can I do, and then decide whether they will come and help you out or not. They simply say, where are you? And they get dressed and they're on their way. And how many people do we have like that in our lives? A friend who is a friend even in times of adversity. That's what Proverbs 17 and verse 17 says. A friend loves at all times. A brother is born for adversity. And in the nature of the writing and the Hebrew style, the idea of a friend who loves at all times and a brother who is born for adversity are parallel ideas. So a friend is one that you can count on even in the worst of times. Verse 11 tells us that two will stay warm together. And of course, the point about this is not so much about physical warmth, though some of you huddled together here tonight might think that's the most important thing. But we're talking about more like a metaphor for emotional warmth. That is, a friend is one who makes you feel warm. A friend is one who makes you feel welcome. A friend is one who encourages you and makes you feel safe. A friend is one to whom you can tell what is on your mind and get an honest answer and trust them to keep that information to themselves. The proverb goes ahead and suggests the same idea about friendship in Proverbs 27 and verse 9. Proverbs 27 and verse 9, oil and perfume make the heart glad, so a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. So when we think about those who are friends, those are the ones that we go to when we are distraught, when we are down, and they're the ones who can lift us up. Of course, every time we talk about a friend in that sense, we ought also to talk about a friend from the other perspective. Are there people that call us and we are ready to go in the middle of the night and to help them? Are there people who, when they speak to us and they tell us what's on their heart, that we are ready to lift them up and to make their hearts glad and to give them sweet counsel? Friendship goes both ways. Mercy may go one direction. Charity may go in one direction. But friendship is a two-way street. Verse 12 in this passage tells us something else about friendship. Verse 12 suggests that a friend is one who protects you when you need protecting. And of course, in this day and age, we seldom need someone to physically fight for us, to watch our back, as it were, in combat. But we really surely do need people to watch our back in terms of the reputational attacks that are launched against us in this world in which we live today. We need someone who will stand up when the gossips are talking about us and say, "Now, I think you're misinterpreting him. I think you're misinterpreting his or her motives." Friends are the ones who, yes, have our back when other people are maligning us or just questioning us. And I'll add one more characteristic to the idea of a friend, not just that a friend is one you can count on in times of trouble. A friend is one who makes you feel warm and encourages you. A friend is one who will protect you and your reputation. But a friend will actually make you a better person. Proverbs 27 and verse 17, another of those passages that Proverbs speaks about friendship. Proverbs 27 and verse 17 says, "Iron sharpens iron, and so one man sharpens another." And of course, whenever I think about the sharpening of iron, we don't really use iron too much these days, more of some kind of variation on that, steel of some sort. But the sharpening is pretty much the same process, a whetstone that you either turn by hand or one that you move the metal back and forth on. Or hopefully you've got one on an electric motor, and when you put that steel axe down on that whetstone, turning around at 1,300 or 1,400 revolutions a second, the sparks fly. It is pretty exciting to watch, but you think about a man sharpening a man, that sounds a little bit kind of painful. And sometimes, of course, the process of improving and growing is painful, but a friend will make us better. We're not always made better just by hearing what we want to hear. It's nice to have acquaintances who are friendly with us and we can pass the time with. But a friend is much more than that. A friend has our best interest in mind. A friend has our improvement in mind. Now, that's not like some harpy or some teacher or even as a parent, but as a comrade along the way who wants the best for you because they know that you would want the best for them. Proverbs 27 and verse 6 suggests about the way in which we make one another better and the value of friends. Proverbs 27 and verse 6, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy." You want flattery, you can get that from most anybody. You want someone who will tell you the truth and help you to overcome whatever kind of character flaws you may have or extricate yourself from the difficulty that you yourself have gotten into. That's when you need a friend. And sometimes the sparks are going to fly. Sometimes it is going to be a little bit painful. Are you a friend? Do you have a friend? The Bible tells us quite a bit about friendship. Interesting ways it tells us about friendship. Jesus, 6 times in the Bible, specifically calls people to whom he spoke friends. He would say to them, as he did in Luke chapter 5 and verse 20, when he saw their faith, "Friend, your sins are forgiven you." And of course, when Jesus uses that word friend, that's not a casual kind of a statement. Jesus knows full well what it means to be a friend, and he knows full well the obligation that he's taking to himself when he names these people as friends. But it's also true that Jesus is going to live up to these qualifications of a friend, that Jesus is the one that you can count on, and Jesus is the one who's going to make you feel better in times of trouble, and Jesus is the one who's going to make you better, and Jesus is the one who will protect you, particularly in a spiritual sense, from the evil one. Jesus particularly said that about one man in John chapter 11 and verse 11. John chapter 11, you know right away we're talking about that man named Lazarus. And Jesus said, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go so that I may awaken him out of sleep." And indeed, they wanted him not to go that close to Jerusalem because the disciples knew that the Pharisees were trying to put him to death by that time. And Jesus said, "We're going anyway because Lazarus is our friend." In fact, Jesus was so much ready to be a friend and to be helpful to those who were in need that in Luke chapter 7 and verse 34, in one of the places, the Pharisees condemned him because of the people that he was making a friend to. Luke chapter 7 and verse 34, they said, "The Son of Man comes eating and drinking, and you say, behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard and a friend of tax collectors and sinners." And they thought that was a bad thing to say about Jesus. But in fact, it's the most wonderful thing the tax collectors and the sinners ever heard, that Jesus was their friend. We might well wish that Jesus is our friend. In fact, Joseph Scriven wrote a song about that, a poem originally in 1855 that became a song, number 69 in our hymn book, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus, All Our Sins and Griefs to Bear. What a privilege to carry everything to Him in prayer. What peace we often forfeit, what needless pain we bear, all because we do not carry everything to God in prayer." What a friend that we have in Jesus. As Gary pointed out this morning in his lesson, we do have a friend in Jesus, a friend in high places, and that's the best kind of friend to have. But he tells us, you know, exactly what it required to be his friend. You remember? If you want Jesus to be your friend, John chapter 15 and verse 14, he's talking in that last lengthy discourse to his disciples before he goes to the cross. And in John 15 and verse 14, "You are my friends if you do what I command you." And once again, friendship flows both ways. It is certainly clear that Jesus has mercy on us and that Jesus provides his love and his charity toward us. But he said, "You are my friends if, in fact, you do what I have commanded you." Because friendship is something different than just mercy. Friendship goes both ways. Friends are important, and they have a powerful impact on the quality of our lives. And Jesus is our best friend. But we are warned in the Bible against making the wrong kinds of friends too, because friends are powerful in their influence on who we are. James chapter 4 and verse 4, the writer there suggests that you got a choice, really, and that's kind of what the Bible is about, the choice that we make. You got a choice. You can either be friends with the world or you can be friends with God. James chapter 4, verse 4, "Don't you know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." And the corollary certainly is true as well. If you're going to be friends with God, you're going to be in opposition to the world, and the world's going to be in opposition to you. It's precisely because we need friends so much that they are so powerful in our lives. A powerful force for good, sometimes a powerful force for bad. We need to be real careful about choosing our friends. The Bible talks about some pretty famous kinds of friends. The most famous, of course, of those are David and Jonathan. And the first time they met, I guess in many ways it was Jonathan got to see David in action. And their hearts were knit together. 1 Samuel 18 and verse 1. "Now it came about when he'd finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself." And they were friends thereafter. And Jonathan came to the aid of David on more than one occasion when he was being pursued by his father Saul. And of course, if we think about other friends, Joshua and Caleb, those two names go together, and they certainly must have been friends after they shared what they did, being the only two among the 12 spies who came back with an honest report. And interesting kind of combinations, too, the kinds of people that are friends with one another. And maybe now we're just talking about the casual use of that word, friendly acquaintances, perhaps. But in Luke chapter 23, you'll remember we talked about this passage a few weeks ago. Luke chapter 23 and verse 12, Pilate had Jesus on trial before him, and then he decided that he was a Jew and was in the jurisdiction of Herod, so he sent him to Herod. And Luke 23 and verse 12 says, "Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day. Before that, they'd been enemies. But now, Jesus had brought them together. Not quite in the way that we would like for Jesus to bring people together, but in opposition to Jesus and in opposition to righteousness, they were brought together." And of course, there are other friends we know about in the Bible too. Job had friends. Job chapter 2, verse 11. You remember what had happened to Job and how many terrible things struck him, just one right after the other, one calamity after another, and then he is reduced to just sitting on the ash heap. And in Job chapter 2 and verse 11, now when Job's three friends heard all this adversity that had come upon him, they came each one from their own place, Eliphaz and Bildad and Zophar, and they made an appointment to come together and to sympathize with him and to comfort him. Yes, Job had three friends for all the good that it did him, I guess, because we know how little comfort they actually brought him and how little they provided protection and support for him. Job chapter 12 and verse 4, Job says in Job 12 and verse 4, I am a joke to my friends. And Job 16 and verse 20, he refers to his friends again. Job 16 and verse 20, my friends are my scoffers. That's not the kind of friend that you want to have. Those are pretty bad friends. But I'll tell you this, the thing I wanted to really concentrate on this evening is the worst friend in the Bible. The worst friend in the Bible, even worse than these guys. And you find that story in 2 Samuel chapter 13. 2 Samuel chapter 13. Is after David has brought the consequences of the sword into his family because he'd committed adultery. And he has these number of sons. Among them is Amnon and Absalom. And Absalom has another sister. And this is a half-sister then to Amnon. And Amnon is just sick with love for Tamar, his half-sister. And here we read in 2 Samuel chapter 13 in verse 3, as Amnon is sick with his love for Tamar. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab. And Jonadab was a very shrewd man. Amnon had a friend. And that sounds pretty promising. Amnon had a friend. And his friend was a very shrewd man. And you'd rather have a shrewd man for a friend, I suppose, than one who is not very smart. He has a friend, but that is a really bad thing, because his friend seems to be concerned about his happiness, but his friend does not measure up to those characteristics we talked about in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. When his friend finds out what the problem is, in 2 Samuel chapter 13, verse 4, he gives him the wrong kind of advice. He said to him, that is Jonadab, O son of the king, why are you so depressed morning after morning? Will you not tell me? Then Amnon said, I am in love with Tamar, the sister of my brother Absalom. And he gave him advice. He taught Amnon how to trick everybody so that he could rape his half-sister. Yes, that was the advice that his friend gave him. Amnon had a friend. If ever there were ironic words in the Bible, those have got to be ironic words. Amnon had a friend. He offered Amnon the path to what he wanted. He seemed to sympathize with him. He seemed to be concerned about what Amnon was concerned about, but he told him exactly the wrong thing to do. He told him what he wanted to hear, but he told him the wrong thing. Despite the fact that it was wrong, and if he was a shrewd man, he knew it was wrong. And despite the fact that it turned out so very badly for Amnon, and it was bound to turn out badly for him from the very beginning. But it was just what Amnon wanted to hear. Go back to that passage in Proverbs 27, verse 6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. And Jonadab was much more of an enemy to Amnon than he was a friend. Between Amnon and this great sin, there was every possible obstacle in the way. Human sympathy, conscience, the warning from others, God's law, the gentle appeal of the young woman herself when she found herself in his clutches. There was a father's anger to consider, a brother's revenge to consider. Any reasonable man thinking about it would have known it was the wrong thing to do. But set against all of this and overriding all of this was a friend's advice. If Jonadab had just said, look, think about all of these things, all of these obstacles, all of these terrible consequences, that might have been a different outcome for Amnon. But no, his friend said, forget all of that. This is what you want, and this is the way you can have it. And Amnon's punishment may have been delayed for a while. In fact, it was 2 years later, but it was pretty certain in coming. 2 Samuel 13 and verse 23 tells us about the consequences when they finally came. 2 Samuel 13 and verse 23, now it came about after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shares at Baal-Hazar, which is near Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. And it's like a scheme, you see here. It's like a scheme because Amnon, 2 years later, thinks maybe his brother, his half-brother Absalom, has gotten over it. Absalom invites all the king's sons, and it would have been a slight had he left out Amnon, the one of them. But he invites him, and it doesn't seem like it's all just designed as a means for revenge against Amnon. But Amnon pays for his sin with his life. Oh, Amnon had a friend, all right, a friend that told him exactly what he wanted to hear, and now he's going to pay the price for it. 2 Samuel 13 and verse 28, Absalom commanded his servant, saying, see now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then put him to death. And do not fear, have not I myself commanded you? Be courageous, be valiant. And the servants of Absalom did to Amnon just as Absalom had commanded. And then all the king's sons arose, and each mounted his mule, and they fled. And Amnon, you know, he might have thought he'd gotten away with it. 2 years, you know, I suspect, you know, the first few nights after he was like tortured, tormented by his conscience. If he had any at all, he surely was. But by now, 2 years later, he thinks it's all done and over with. There must be a statute of limitations on sin. Surely people have forgotten, but not Absalom. Absalom hadn't forgotten. He'd been plotting all along. And Amnon died. And there's somebody else who should have died with him. Jonadab should have died with him because it was Jonadab's advice. And Jonadab was his friend. And Jonadab was the one who said, we're in this together. But Jonadab, who started him down to the road to destruction, was not there to share the end with him. In fact, Jonadab seems to have pretty blithely switched sides. After this death of Amnon has taken place, it is Jonadab who reports to David what has happened in 2 Samuel 13 and verse 30. See if this sounds like a friend of Amnon who is telling the story. 2 Samuel 13 and verse 30, now it was while they were on their way that the report came to David saying, Absalom has struck down all the king's sons and not one of them is left. And then the king arose and tore his clothes and lay on the ground, and all his servants were standing by with clothes torn. And Jonadab, the son of Shimei, David's brother, responded, do not let my lord suppose they put to death all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon alone is dead, because by the intent of Absalom this has been determined since the day that he violated his sister Tamar. Now, therefore, do not let my lord the king take the report to heart, namely, all the king's sons are dead. Only Amnon is dead. You hear the way he says that? Only Amnon is dead. It was the intent of Absalom's heart from the very beginning that this was going to happen. That's not much of a friend who says, only my friend is dead. It's not much of a friend who seemed to know about this whole kind of stratagem from the very beginning and all along. He already seemed to know what Absalom was going to do. No, Jonadab was not a friend of Amnon. He's what we think of in the world today as a friend. He's what people would say is a friend. You know, the Hebrews, they didn't have punctuation marks, which would make a lot of my students really happy. But if they had had punctuation marks, they would have had quotations around this word. Jonadab had a friend. Jonadab thought he had a friend. Other people might have thought Jonadab was his friend. But he was never a friend to Amnon. He was never the kind of friend who would have made Amnon better. He was never the kind of friend who would have been at pains to say to him, you shouldn't do what you think you're going to do. Amnon died because of the advice of this so-called friend. And some people have suggested, if there was a tombstone and on it was written the epitaph for Amnon, it would be, he had a friend. He had a friend. And you think about that, how many tombstones around the country, particularly tombstones for young people dead well before their time, could say exactly that. He had a friend. She had a friend. We need other people, there's no doubt of that. From the very beginning, God said it's not good for a man to be alone. The book of Ecclesiastes says, you know, one man by himself is weak. One man by himself is going to be cold. One man by himself is going to be vulnerable to the world. We need other people. There's no doubt about that. And friendship really is one of the best things that God has given us in this life. Seneca wrote that God divided man into men that they might be friends. He didn't just create one man. He created a whole race of men so that we might have friendship, companionship, that we might have a relationship with other people. When people don't have friends, they are some of the most pathetic, lonely people in the world. And people who don't have friends, family, friends, connection of a human nature, they make friends out of animals. Even in prison, men have been known to take some part of their scanty rations and feed the rat, or to have some kind of sense of connection with the spider building a web in the corner of their cell. People are not designed for solitude. And a man who is alone by himself is vulnerable. A man who has friends is supported and protected. At least that's the way Ecclesiastes 4 suggest that friends ought to be. Even when Jesus came into the world, he called companions to himself. When he came in the form of a man, he had friends. He had those disciples that he gathered and he taught and he sent out into the world. When he calls us to be disciples, he calls us in a community, in a congregation. There are plenty of people who have some kind of vague idea that they could be a Christian just by themselves. They could be a Christian without having to associate with other Christians. That's not at all the picture that we get in the New Testament. Everywhere you see Christians, they're called into a body. They were being added daily to the church, such as who were being saved. We are a part of a group because we need other people. Friendship is what supports us and encourages us and protects us in this world. But there is that bad side to friendship too. Like any of God's gifts, it can be used for good or for bad. Some people, in fact, I don't know whether it's even worth considering about that, but theologians debate about all kinds of things. And some of them even debate whether there could be a sin if there was just one man. There sure wouldn't be a tempter if there was just one man. Even in Eden, we see somebody who had to come from outside, Satan, and provide the questioning. When you think about the young prophet who had served so valiantly God when he'd gone up to Jeroboam and denounced him being led astray by an old prophet who pretended that he was his friend, you see how bad friendship can go. And you can see the effect that bad parents have on their children. But one thing parents know, one thing good parents know, is the importance of good friends for their children. And that's why they're constantly asking, who are you going to be with? Do I know them? Do I know their parents? What do you know about them? Because friends are powerfully important in the way in which we turn out in the world, particularly for young people. And if you ever needed any evidence of that, all you have to look at as poor old Amnon. Well, poor old Amnon, he was bad in the first place, but he was worse than bad because he had a friend, quotation marks, named Jonadab. Some people have suggested, of course, that our friends are the cause of our downfall. And there seems to be plenty of evidence to suggest about that. You know, whenever you see someone who has kind of slipped away from the church, they have lost their faith, they usually had some help with that. They have a friend who's helped them to ask those questions, a friend who has supported them in their determination to absent themselves from the worship of the services. They have a friend who has helped them. Of course, they chose that friend, which in the thinking of some people makes them doubly sinful. Not only because they committed the sin, whether it is some kind of fleshly sin or whether it's some kind of spiritual sin, they're guilty of that sin because God's going to judge them on what they have done, but they're also guilty of having chosen a friend that led them into that kind of sin. It's amazing how much impact friends have on us. Good friends, of course, are a good investment. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good return on their labor. You can get a whole lot more done when there are two of you working than if there was just one person working here and one there and we added it up. There is a return on the investment. But bad friends are a ruinous investment. Bad friends will bankrupt you, not only in dollars and cents, but spiritually and morally as well. Just look at poor old Amnon. Amnon had a friend, Jonadab. That's how the Bible sums up his life. Amnon had a friend, Jonadab. And I'll tell you this, when we think about our children, we see it so clearly. Their friends are important. Their friends are going to be really, in many ways, the determinative factor in their life. So in some ways, what Apostle Paul was talking about when he wrote to Timothy, and he said, remember from whom you first learned these things, from your mother, from your grandmother, and of course from Paul himself. Because children have a tendency to forget about the influence of their parents or to minimize their parents warning them about this and warning them about that and encouraging them to do this and suggesting they should do the other. But let their peer pressure, we say in the modern world of psychobabble today, let their friends suggest to them, you don't need to do that or you should do this. And all of a sudden, that just overwhelms whatever kind of years of advice the parents have provided. We need to be very careful in choosing our friends in the same way that we know that our children need to be careful about choosing their friends. We need to have the kind of friends that Ecclesiastes chapter 4 talks about. We need to have the kind of friend that is praised in the book of Proverbs. We need to know the right things to look for in a friend. It doesn't matter whether they're influential. Children, they look for somebody who's popular. Adults, they look for somebody who's influential. I don't know which is worse, popular or influential. No, what we need to be looking for is not somebody who is funny and flippant, not somebody who's popular, not somebody who's influential, not somebody who's ambitious in the ways of the world, not somebody who flatters us and tells us what we want to hear. No, what we need to look for is someone who can build us up spiritually. We need to know, is this person a friend of Jesus? Is this person going to bring me closer to Jesus? You need to think a little bit about the way in which Jonadab probably influenced Amnon. You don't have to give much thought to it because he said that to him. Aren't you the king's son? Aren't you the king's son? Don't you deserve to have what you want? Can't you get away with it because you're the king's son? You deserve better than what you're getting. You should have what you want. You're smarter than everybody else. You're better than everybody else. They'll never catch on. A better friend would have said to him, that's a wrong-headed thing to be even thinking about. You need to do this and that and the other and get out of this moping that you're doing because you don't have what you want. Of course, a lot of people prefer the bad advice that soothes their pride rather than the good advice that will save their soul. We need to have the kind of friends who will tell us when we're wrong. You know about the future of a person by looking at their friends. You see their friends. You know the spiritual quality of the friends. Get a pretty good idea about the spiritual future for that particular person. You know, it's an amazing thing. You rarely ever see some bad person being influenced to good by a friend who is a good person. What you see so often, though, is a good person being influenced negatively by a friend who is a bad person. what you see very frequently, people that are just drifting through life, they're going to have a friend who will set them in a course, usually a bad course. People that are purposeful in their life, that know where they're going, who know what they want out of life, particularly those who are spiritual minded, are not likely to be influenced by these kinds of so-called friends. We need a friend who is willing to tell us the hard thing. A friend who's willing to sacrifice for us. A friend who's willing to suffer with us. A true friend will tell you the right thing to do, not the thing you want to hear. A true friend will sacrifice for you. And that was certainly true of Jesus, was it not? That's why that song says, what a friend we have in Jesus. Have we trials and temptations? Is there trouble anywhere? We should never be discouraged. We should take it to the Lord in prayer. Can you find a friend so faithful who will all our sorrows share? Jesus, what a friend we have in Jesus. You know, we need friends, but especially one in high places. Jesus has been there through the veil. He has been through the temptations. He has been through death. He has risen to glory at the right hand of God. And he is our friend there in high places. And when we come to die, we don't want that kind of epitaph on our tombstone that Amnon would have had. He had a friend with quotation marks around it. How much better that when we come to die, people would say, or more importantly, Jesus would say, friend, enter into glory. That's what we would need to work on in this life. If you're here this evening and you're not the friend of Jesus, you know exactly how that you can become his friend and that he will become your friend. And that is to do his commandments, beginning, of course, with the repudiation of all the sin in your life, being baptized in the likeness of his death and his burial and resurrection to rise to a new life, and then walking according to his will and taking all your sorrows to him and living your life for it. Won't you be Jesus' friend tonight? We encourage you, if you are not already, to come as we stand and sing.